Not delightful. I'm done with it. I'm done with the rain in LA. It's been three straight months. No, CJ. No, that's you're in a dark place. You're in a dark place.
I didn't sleep much last night.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's okay.
How's everybody doing?
Here's the thing.
Yeah.
I love doing this podcast with y'all, but when it's raining outside, there is that part of me. I get dreary. I get sad. So I want to keep the energy up today. We're going to keep it up.
Oh, yeah.
And keep it high.
Keep it high.
We had some giggles before we started.
Yeah, it was fun.
Here with our friend Pam. Pam, you can talk before we actually...
I thought I was going to be making like a big entrance. So
no, we'll do that later. No, we don't like that. We don't like that. We like you to talk first and then we'll introduce you again. No, Pam's here. We're so happy that Pam's here. But we'll introduce you for real later. Scott, you said you had something you wanted to talk about and it had something to do with DJ.
Derek Jacobi.
Yeah. Oh, right.
I just watched his Doctor Who episode, which is a very famous Doctor Who episode, where he plays the master. He's the master,
the war doctor.
And then he regenerates. Anyway, but he just had a really interesting article in The Guardian, just talking about the what he described as the diminishing of the quality of voice in theater, that we've lost sort of. The passion for great speaking and words, and that's being supplanted with more visual, more epic kind of theater spectacle. And I just thought it was interesting because we talk about it all the time, just sort of going back to basics.
Literally just getting done talking about Andrew Lloyd Webber and having all of God's money to produce something huge and flashy.
Yeah, right. Well, yeah, exactly. But then just the idea of speaking and doing your link later and all that good stuff. And
freeing the natural voice, y'all.
Yeah. And
as someone who's been working on Shakespeare with high schoolers, most of our work is vocal technique, right? Mm-hmm. Because one, we were outside in an amphitheater where there was like helicopters and ice cream trucks.
We heard three ice cream trucks.
Nuns yelling at children because it was at a Polish Catholic church, and like it was crazy town.
Well, we should totally digress real quick and talk about how awesome that was.
It was so much fun.
DJ and I went to see Bailey's directorial effort, which was A War of the Roses with, what was the age range of the kids?
I think the youngest was 12 or 13, and then the oldest was 17 or 18.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
And
hours. It was two parts, but it was the whole Henry VI trilogy made into two plays. So you could see one part or both parts, and they did the Angels in America. They watched it all the way through.
We had nice
bottom.
We had snacks at the break, and
we had trunk shrimp cocktail. It was great.
It was really good. But no, just to your credit, first of all, those kids were amazing. Like I was, we talked about this off mic, but like there was a point of me that was like, I'm about to go see 4 to 5 hours of kids doing Shakespeare. I don't know how great this is going to be, but I was in it the whole time.
Aww, like, it was great. I'm so jealous. I wish I could have seen it.
It was just great. And
I wasn't invited.
I wasn't invited. Yeah. I was locked out. But the kids' voices were amazing. Like, I followed the story, which is not an easy story to follow. No. You know, it's
not
it's
a well-written trilogy.
Certainly the first part is just horrible, which we talked about on our Shakespeare end of season last year.
This is
episode,
true.
But it did just well. Great. It was great, and applause to you, sir.
Appreciate it. We love theater. Speaking of, welcome to Theater, the
That's
theater
great.
Podcast.
Great job on that.
I tried. It was really sweaty, but I did it. It was a sweaty one. Welcome to Theater, the theater podcast for theater nerds, made by three theater makers from the LA theater scene. I'm J. Bailey Bertram.
I'm C.J. Merriman.
I am Scott Leggett.
And each week we get together to discuss and debate the definition of theater through various lenses. And this week we are joined by a friend of the pod who has been on many times and always comes back for these mini-series, which we always love and appreciate, my dear friend and collaborator, and someone who you might know from TikTok.
From TikTok.
Also, America's Got Talent.
Yeah.
Also, just all around LA theater and fringe, and just is a overall badass of the stage.
Here.
Pam.
Oh,
hey,
it's me. I didn't know where this was leading.
Just Pam.
Pam Clan. Bye, everybody. It's so good to be back. I've missed you guys a lot.
We've missed you too. And
I haven't written a song
for us this season, so we need to maybe change that.
Yeah.
I could do like a big mid-season. Hey, you're in the middle of theater.
That's a really good idea.
I love it.
It writes itself. It's a great premise. Yeah,
you also wrote our bonus episode theme, which only plays now and then. It won't play at the beginning of this one because this is main feed now. We're not considering this bonus.
Give the people what they want.
Right. I'll put it at the end. I'll put the bonus episode song at the end because I think they should hear it. It's a good song.
Yes.
Yeah.
And Pam, if you have anything else you want to send me, I'll slap it at the end of the episode. Who cares?
Patti LuPone's 1979 recording.
No, I can't do that. This will be you. Thank you for joining us. We're so happy to have you here for original movie musicals, the miniseries. This is our second go around with this. Last time we did like Greatest Showman and
High School Musical
and Tommy, I think.
And South Park.
And South Park, Bigger, Longer, Uncut.
For some reason, Tommy still sits with me. Like, that experience of watching that movie with you, it's like, I still think about it.
Yeah.
It's so epic and weird.
It's a fucking experience. Yeah,
it was an experience, for sure.
It's a ride.
As it should be.
Yeah.
But we're covering things that are movies first, just like those four were, right? Mm-hmm. So this time, we already did The Wizard of Oz, which I have a little correction corner for.
Okay.
We said some stupid shit, and it's fine. We'll get there.
You guys probably did, not me.
Well,
no.
Actually, it was mostly you. No, I'm kidding.
Ding, ding, ding.
Actually, only me. It was really only me. Y'all just, like, agreed, and we moved on.
Yeah.
But then, this week, we're covering the 1986 film, one of my favorites, Labyrinth.
Yes.
I came here because I thought we were doing the movie Taxi.
Shit.
Listen.
Wait.
Talk practically the same film.
Taxi, the Queen Latifah Jimmy Fallon film?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Nice pull, both of you.
I assumed that's what we all assumed.
Is there another Taxi? That's the only movie, right?
There's Taxi Driver. And then there's
That's not called Taxi.
There's DC Cab, which is Mr. T is not a great flick.
There's a television show Taxi, right?
Yes. Judd Hirsch. Yeah.
That was a good
Lloyd
one.
And
Andy Kaufman.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You're right. Yeah, I've talked about that bit with Danny DeVito before where you can never do that bit with Danny DeVito ever again.
The first joke?
First joke with Danny DeVito is that he's up really taller than everybody up in the booth, and then he finally steps down and you realize he's tiny and everyone just laughs for like 10 minutes.
What a king
you can never
men.
Do it again. You can never do it again.
Yeah. I don't even remember. I'm going to do some YouTubing when I get home.
I think it's also on, like,
got to be on something.
It's on something. I watched it recently. It's good shit.
I got to go back and rewatch that.
Cheers is on Hulu, but only the first four seasons. So I went to go revisit it, and then it's all this cliffhanger with Sam and Diane, and he calls somebody to marry him.
Stupid.
It used to all be on Netflix because I watched Cheers and then Frasier all in one chunk.
This crazy licensing, swapping around of stuff, dropping stuff from one thing and going on another thing. I just can't handle all the platforms. I got four. I can handle four, and then my brain starts to melt. Mm. Yeah.
This tell us how you fucked up last week, Bailey.
Huh?
Tell us the Wizard of Oz fuck up.
Oh, right. Okay, yeah, shit. I forgot about that. I was about to join in. Correction Corner. Andrew Lloyd Webber's Drew Lo Dubs' Wizard of Oz is the same as the movie, but he like reorchestrated some stuff and made it better for the stage and like more epic. And there's like minor additions and subtractions, but I sort of was talking about it as if it's this whole new musical with all new music.
Oh, that's what I had read. I just never wanted to go dip my toe there.
I started looking for music online to put at the beginning of the last episode, and I ended up clicking on an Andrew Lloyd Webber song, and I was like, oh, this is in the movie. And then I started clicking through the whole London cast, and I went, oh, this is just the movie. And it's like beefed up. There's just like a lot more orchestration, and there's little additions and things. So it's based on the film, but there's more to it, and like the jitterbug is back and things. And I still don't need it.
Yeah.
No.
That's
agreed.
So,
well, I,
we
one
didn't
of
really
the things
correction corner, but I just wanted to say it.
Well, one of the things, and I didn't bring it up last week about the jitterbug, but one of the reasons that they decided to take it out was because it was so of its time and place. Oh. It was very pop culture at that time. Mm-hmm. Somebody had the sense jitterbug to kind of go, oh, let's not do that. And I think that's good. It's kept it timeless.
Labyrinth was my choice. Yeah. I wanted to cover this one. It took me a long time to decide, and I was going back and forth between the Muppet movies, actually. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, wait.
Which one would you have done?
Muppet Caper.
What's the theater stuff in that?
It's not. It's just a musical.
It's an original, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
they sing in that one, too.
And not as much, though, as maybe some of the others.
Because Manhattan was
Manhattan,
what I was thinking.
Manhattan, obviously, yeah, yeah. But I think we should do a whole episode on that anyway.
Or like just Muppet.
Outside of this miniseries.
Muppet.
True, yeah,
we
exactly.
We could do Muppets, yeah.
Talk Christmas and the Christmas Carol.
Christmas is my favorite
one. Yeah, it's a good one. I have a friend who that is his favorite film.
Period.
Oh. Period. He's like, no, that's
great.
The greatest film of all time. I'm like, Michael Caine.
Michael Caine.
I'm going to bring in the Muppet movie, A Christmas Toy, which nobody knows, but it's a 45-minute long Christmas musical.
Wait, will you guys have me back
TV,
for that
yeah.
one?
No. Sure.
No, we absolutely
anytime.
Of course.
I love it when you're here.
Great.
Yeah.
Great.
Absolutely.
I'm on an
will.
Emotional roller coaster.
Just oh, yeah. I'm sorry.
No, but this is good. Pam, I want to start with you. I want to know everybody's sort of context with Labyrinth. And sort of with Jim Henson, but you know, mostly with this film. What was your introduction?
I didn't get into Labyrinth until later. I saw it as a kid. I didn't like it. I don't know if it's because I found it like creepy, or it kind of gave me the same vibes as Return to Oz a little bit. So I kind of stayed away from that as a kid.
Sure.
I liked happier things back then, but which is funny. But I now I think as an adult, I appreciate it more from the cult aspect and the impact that it's had on, you know, that kind of genre.
Yeah.
I think it's a great time now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Siege?
Yeah, kind of the same thing. I was watching it because I was like, I don't remember the last time I watched this movie. And I watched it and I was like, this would have scared the fuck out of me when I was a little kid. But I did. I had a lot of time with the Muppets. I was a Sesame Street kid. I was a Fraggle Rock kid. I was a Muppet Show kid.
Sure.
I think I was more into the TV shows more than the movies. Mm.
Down in Fraggle Rock.
Yeah.
Love it.
Down at Fraggle Rock.
Scott.
So Rock. I'm the old man here who saw this in the theater. I remember being taken as a kid to see it. And at that point, I was a huge Dark Crystal fan.
Yeah.
And
same
so I was
concept artist.
Yeah,
same
yeah. So I was yeah. so stoked to see it. And I remember digging it, and I remember getting the VHS of it and watching it a lot, but I hadn't returned to it. I couldn't remember the last time I'd watched it. It was so ingrained in me. But then, like, just from the opening, it's so beautifully 80s.
The
synth noise and the graphics and all of it. And I was.
But it's like that feeling of 80s trying to be edgy. Which
yeah, oh, yeah, totally.
So
yeah,
much.
Yeah,
yes.
yeah. You know, and you could see like where Stranger Things like ripped off stuff like that. And so, yeah.
But trying to be edgy knowing it's still a children's film.
Right.
Yes.
Right?
How
it's
far
walking
can
that
we
line.
Push it before it's too far?
Right.
And then they do go too far sometimes.
I think Jim Henson really has a way, and I see it a lot in this movie, of having moments that are scary, like the moments where she's getting ready to make the wish and it keeps cutting to all the goblins sitting together.
Oh,
that would have scared me as a kid. But
she's
it's scary.
It.
And then he cuts the tension with them making a silly joke. Like the dumb guy in the back's like, what is he talking about? So that happens a lot in this movie. Yeah. What about you, Beige?
Yeah, so I was introduced to this film by my much older brothers, who were like, well, you like Great Muppet Caper? Great. Here, watch this.
Potato, potato.
Yeah,
right?
And I think I mentioned this last time. My first two VHS tapes that I owned were Wizard of Oz and The Great Muppet Caper. So I was already like, anything Jim Henson. You said Jim Henson, and I was like, great, yeah, give it to me.
Yeah.
Intravenously, I will take it into my veins. So when I was shown the cover of this, I was like, perfect. This will be my favorite movie. I don't care what happens. It looks like The Neverending Story, which I was a big fan of, things. So I watched it, and I was definitely frightened by it, but I was frightened by most of the things I loved as a kid. I still loved it.
Yeah.
And I was in love with Jennifer Connelly and kind of also a little in love with David Bowie.
100%.
I want to know what the junk revealing pants budget
was. Oh, yeah. We got to talk about the pants. They made me
called
very
a considerable bulge.
Yeah.
But it's so prominent. It's just,
it really
it's there. It's, there's the scene where it's like right in her face. We'll get to it.
I did have the poster in my room. And it was a beautiful, like, hand-painted poster of, like, all the characters.
Nice.
It was really gorgeous. I still have it somewhere. It's framed.
Yeah, it's
beautiful.
A really great poster.
I also have this DVD that I'm holding currently, which I remember the story of how I got this. I wasn't someone who could collect DVDs when I was young, or VHSs and stuff so much when I was younger, because we didn't have a whole lot of money. And so when I got something, it was, like, really important to me.
Yeah.
This one was dropped in the Blockbuster when I was working at Blockbuster in high school. This was dropped in the return drop.
Right.
And no one came and got it for a week, so I took it home.
Oh,
nice. Because it's not a
rental. It
wasn't
a Blockbuster.
It was just their own film.
Wow, what a difference.
I was like,
difference.
Cool, I'm taking that home. So I'm going to cherish it forever.
Yeah.
It'll always remind me of Blockbuster. Which is dead and gone.
It's a lovely, it's a great cover on that, too. Good cover.
Yeah, it's okay. You kept it
in relatively good shape.
Yeah, you can kind of see David Bowie in the back,
shape.
And it's... It's not. Right. You're looking at it over Zoom. It looks like shit.
Okay.
But that's okay.
This is a visual medium for sure.
Well, I post it all on Instagram, but you're right.
Yeah.
You're in a mood today, Sajay. Jesus Christ.
It's Pam. I feel emboldened.
She's ready to debunk everything.
Right, sure. No, but this was a big movie for me. On rewatch, I see all the things. I'm like, okay. You know, it's not necessary. And also, a lot of the green screen stuff that didn't age well, where you're just like, whoa.
Yeah.
Sure.
They're doing like magic tricks in Great Muppet Caper, where they're like riding bikes. And then all of a sudden, these things in front of green screens are looking foolish, and you're like, I don't know. And they're switching.
I think I remembered, because I actually just rewatched The Muppet Christmas Carol for the first time in years this last Christmas. And I remember when that movie was coming out, they were talking about like the updates they had done, because there were scenes where you could see Kermit walking down the street, and they had like made things look better than they had before when they were doing all the green screen stuff.
Interesting.
Oh no, Scott, we got to be on these two.
Yeah, I know.
So you've been doing to me the whole time. Great, Bailey. Directed by Jim Henson.
Yes.
Produced by George Lucas.
George Lucas.
Who refused to do any press for this because he wanted Jim Henson to keep the spotlight.
Yeah.
Because he didn't want it to look like a Star Wars type thing. He wanted it to look like a...
And he brought Darth Vader to the set, right? To like kind of give... I think he brought Darth Vader to the set to give Jim Henson a good luck card.
Cool.
I love that.
Yeah. He took off his helmet and it was James Earl Jones.
Yeah. May or may not have been James Earl Jones.
Yeah, exactly.
Couldn't afford the day fee.
Right. This is loosely based on the Maurice Sendak book, Outside Over There, which I love Maurice Sendak, but I don't know that one. And then it's also lightly based on The Wizard of Oz.
Yeah,
I made the note that this was an interesting thing to cover right after we covered Wizard of Oz.
Yeah, I mean it's that same trope, and you know it's a good one. It's a good one. You know,
it works.
I've got my notes about this movie, but I just love it. You know, and just all the people involved too. Terry Jones gets screenplay credit from Monty Python fame,
of course. Yep.
Although many others contributed, he was the one that did the original draft and got.
So I guess apparently he did the original draft, and it was like dark and weird, and then they sent it to a whole bunch of other people, and it became a children's film because of Bowie. Bowie was the one who was like, I think this is a kid's film, and they were like, okay, maybe it is, and they went that direction, and then they went back to Terry Jones and went, can you put the jokes back in this? It's not funny anymore. So he gets the credit, which is great.
Hear definite, you know, the guards at the gate and all that
it's
stuff.
It's very Monty Python.
I was getting that feeling too watching it.
Yeah.
So there's, let's talk through some of the personnel, as you said, David Bowie.
Yeah.
At the height of his fame.
Yeah.
He had just done the Let's Dance video.
Right.
Like the year before. So he's ultimate right now.
Which isn't my favorite Bowie period. He's kind of all over the place in the 80s. And then by the end of the 80s, he starts to sort of have a comeback artistically. Sure. But he does great stuff.
I feel like only David Bowie could get away with the sex appeal in this movie. And and just what he's putting forward, the energy he's putting forward is so sexual without outwardly being called sexual. It's just this like and chemistry. It's crazy.
Definitely on purpose, because here are the other people they considered. You ready? Michael Jackson, which at the time maybe makes sense. Mick Jagger.
Okay.
Might have been interesting. Yeah. Prince, which I think is maybe the best version of this.
Yeah, that would have been too much a sexy.
That would have been all the sexy. Yeah.
Was right after Purple Rain, too. Like,
oh, my God.
Which
my
is the first time that Scott ever saw a hand go down a lady's panties.
Purple Rain.
Oh, my.
Yeah. Wow.
The other person who was actually pretty much cast in the role, Jim Henson really wanted him, was Sting.
Yeah, Sting would have. I think Bowie's probably a better actor, just based.
Sting is like a safer choice. I feel like David Bowie's a little bit more risky, which I like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Sting doesn't do a whole lot of acting besides Dune, right? What else has he done? He was in the David Lynch Dune.
Just like musical theater stuff. He was in that last ship show.
And he did. I think he did Three Penny Opera on Broadway.
Right,
but
right,
he'd
right.
also done. I think he'd done The Elephant Man on stage.
Right, but in terms of film, I don't think he's done a whole lot. But Bowie's at least, I mean, Bowie does.
He was in
Twin Peaks.
This other play. I'm just going to keep mentioning theater stuff so Bailey's head explodes.
That was going to happen. I don't know what this is about. Wait, why is everybody turning on me?
Like, We just keep listing theater stuff.
Yeah, Sting, I don't know. I don't think it plays as much. Bowie's great. We love Bowie in Zoolander, obviously.
Yes, absolutely.
Jennifer Connelly, who before this had only done some minor stuff, but she had been in that film Phenomena, which I believe
I thought
is
you were going to say Phenomenon with John Travolta. Like,
yeah, I was like,
no. I think it's a Dario Argento film. Let me double check.
Oh,
I wrote down, isn't this when every teenage boy fell in love with Jennifer Connelly?
Oh, yeah.
And
for
stayed
sure.
in love with her.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I was like six, but yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's true.
I was like 12, so.
Yeah, yeah. It's Jennifer Connelly and Donald Pleasance. We stand a legend.
Donald Pleasant.
And it's a Dario Argento film. Yeah, Phenomena. And she was, this is just the year before. And so she kind of gets cast out of that. They're like, ooh, she's good. So they cast her. Obviously, she's in the newly hit Oscar-winning film Top Gun Maverick.
Yeah. 80s callback. Top Gun, the original Top Gun, also came out in 1986. So there you go. There's some trivia for you.
We're all in this.
So who are some of your favorite characters in this? Because we got a lot of characters. We got puppets galore. Not favorite puppet, but favorite. Because favorite puppet is it? Well, answer that first. Who's your favorite puppet? Because there's some cool puppets that aren't necessarily my favorite characters.
I love the goblins. Yeah, I love the goblins. I love them throughout the movie. And just the intro of them against that black background and all the faces at you. And they're just marvelous design. Like, just all of their faces are just so intricate and beautiful and ugly and weird, fucked up. I love it.
Yes. Well, okay, so you say characters, like, to be honest, all of the things that I wrote down that I loved were all Muppets. Like, I loved Ludo.
Ludo.
And I loved Sir Didymus.
Ludo has a small screen, apparently, in his horn that the person in the costume is constantly looking up at, which is kind of cool. And it's, like, an antenna up into the horn that, like,
Those are forever my favorite Muppets anyway, like the man-sized Muppets that fits somebody in a suit.
Right.
Apparently, they got it down to 100 pounds, and Jim Henson was like, no, it has to be lighter. And they're like, impossible. And he was like, do it. And so they threw a bunch more money at it and got it down to 75 pounds, but it was still too heavy, so they split it between two dudes.
Yeah. It's a big-ass puppet. I also loved Sir Didymus, and I loved the switch between Ambrosius and Merlin, it being a dog and then also a Muppet at some times.
Yeah,
that's pretty funny. Yeah. I really love the worm.
The worm.
At the beginning.
Hello. I wanted him to show back up.
Yeah, he never shows back up, does he?
That's true. There's some controversy surrounding the worm. A lot of people feel like he's a fucking douchebag because he doesn't tell her where to go. But I say, well, he doesn't know what her purpose is here. Yeah. Like, he has no idea. He doesn't want her to get caught by the Goblin King. But a lot of people are like, he could have said, no, do go that way. You will go to the castle, go that way. But then it's like, no, she wouldn't have met all of her friends.
And she would, yeah.
The adventure would have been lame.
Yeah, exactly. We love the worm. I like the little dudes that live in the stones.
Yes!
That'll like pop them.
Oh my god, absolutely.
And they'll go back inside.
Like, the ones that flip the tiles over. Stones, yeah. They're pretty fun.
And they mess up her lipstick. Yeah. Breadcrumbs, yeah. Hilarious. Obviously, Hoggle is like one of the great.
Creepy but wonderful.
Yeah.
I would argue he's like on the level of E.T. of like amazing puppets we've done in film, right? Because he is an actor. Shari Weiser is inside the suit. And then four puppeteers led by Brian Henson, son of Jim Henson, are controlling 18 different motors inside the face rig.
Oh my fuck.
So he can do if you watch, the eyebrows are constantly changing, wrinkles are changing, like it's really, really cool. And he sighs a lot and does like a lot of so that his mouth is open so that the actor can see. But it's like, to me, it's one of the great sort of practical
effects.
Characters that's not CGI.
Yeah.
That
got
we've
it.
Done
yeah.
in film. Hoggle's cool.
Love it. What about you, Pam?
Well, I hated the baby.
That damn baby.
I thought Toby was a cute baby.
I wanted nothing to do with that baby, and I don't know what all the fuss was about. And also, what I did like about the baby was in real life, it peed on David Bowie when it met him.
Good.
Ah, awesome.
So they got off to a rocky start.
So that baby is the son of the set designer and
concept artist
of this and Dark Crystal. And so this baby had been around these things as they were being built and everything. So whenever it looks like it's not okay around the puppets, it's actually totally okay. They're like, that's like, it's crying because it just wants its mom in that moment. And they got the shot. But apparently it like loved every goblin and was friends with all the puppets.
I also read that that actor now is a puppeteer creator and does goblins and stuff.
Right.
I love full that circle. So
he grew
much,
up in the sort of
in best that world. Place to grow up
world
for
of
that.
It. Yeah, it's pretty cool. The dance magic scene, since we're talking about puppets and stuff, Dance Magic Dance is kind of one of the standout songs of this musical. There's over 48 Muppets in that one. There's 52 puppeteers.
A couple of chickens.
8 people in goblin costumes.
Wow.
Which is pretty rad. They had those... Well, now I just want to start talking through all the really cool things in the thing. What are like some of your favorite parts of the film? Like, what do you guys like? I feel like I'm
honestly, I love with like big adventure movies like this where it starts the calm before the storm. I love origin stories to the craziness that's about to happen. So everything from the beginning to her getting there is just kind of like so exciting and
and it moves quickly too.
It does.
They really sort of like, let's get to this shit.
Yeah, like, I love that stuff. Like in Hook, like the kidnapping, like everything that's leading to the craziness. Sorry, I love Hook. I love Hook,
no,
Scott.
No, Scott.
Scott, I love Hook. Let's
I know
talk about
you
it.
Do.
No, but you're right, Pam. You're right.
I'll buy you a drink and I'll talk to you about it.
But they do it way quicker than Hook, right? Like, Hook takes its time.
There's
like a 20-minute first act
in
London, right? And then this film is like, we understand her stepmother and her father and her relationship with them within 2 minutes.
Yeah.
And then she's already like, I wish that baby was gone forever. And you're like, whoa, this movie's going quick.
She's
going
to learn a lesson.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I was going to share my favorite scene in my memory was always the ball, but rewatching it last night, I was just a little bit creeped out.
The ball, like the crystal ball that he's doing.
No. The masquerade.
Oh,
dance.
Oh, sure.
Cause I was always just like, it was just such a weird mix of stuff. And the design is amazing. And
it's a bit Phantom of the Opera. It's pretty gross.
She had a cat's poster hanging on her bedroom wall.
She did.
She also had
we'll get
Escher,
to that in a second.
Cause
her
poster.
She had an Escher, and then there's a whole Escher thing. And we'll talk about that. Cause her room is the whole
very
world.
Telling.
That's the whole point. And we'll get to that later. But the ball scene. So something interesting about this. Choreographer Michael Moshin?
I read about this.
So he's the one who does that crystal ball that I thought you were talking about. He's the one who juggles
the
crystal
magic.
Ball. And he just does it in front of Bo. He just stands behind him and
does the bit,
which is super cool. But... there was another choreographer on it who helped with the masquerade scene, with the ball scene, and she's actually one of the dancers in the ball. Her name's Cheryl McFadden, and a year later she joins the show, she joins a TV show as Gates McFadden.
Yes, it is Star Trek The Next Generation. She's
correct.
Dr. Beverly Crusher.
Correct.
Oh, cool.
She is Dr.
Where's my money?
Crusher.
Where's my money?
Throw that
I just thought that was cool.
Yeah.
I just think, here you go.
I had read about that recently, that she was a professional choreographer before she had booked that show. And,
very cool.
And used, yeah.
That's cool as fuck.
Yeah.
Proud of her. We love you, Gates.
For sure. We love you, Gates.
One of my favorite parts is the helping hands,
which is
falling down into
the
thing.
Which was the hardest thing to shoot,
I'm
right?
Sure.
Was the helping hands.
It was insane.
Over 100 pairs of latex hands, and they're all making these faces, which is like a whole other form of puppeteering.
Terrifying.
We don't really think about. We don't use in film and in Muppet, right, world.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, it's terrifying. And the voices are terrifying.
Yeah.
It kind of reminded me of that Robin Williams movie, What Dreams May Come.
Oh, right.
Sure.
That's what it reminded me of.
No,
that
part where he goes,
hell.
Yeah, when he gets to the place where people go when they commit suicide or whatever, it's like, that's what it is. Hands coming out and grabbing
exactly.
you and whatever.
Yeah.
They're very of that. Ooh.
Ilk.
Yeah, ilk. Thanks. I like that one better. the lying doors?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Are they the goat-headed doors that are like, mm-hmm. one of us is always lying and one of us...
Yeah, yeah. Uh-huh.
Well, and that's my favorite Jennifer Connelly scene is watching her figure it out and how to trick them. I always just love that as a kid, especially like, she beat him.
But then, so she doesn't win though, right?
She gets it wrong.
She ends up in the oubliette. Mm-hmm. And let's talk about that word for a second. Oubliette.
Michael Oublié.
Exactly. This movie introduced me to so many words I don't know I ever would have really been introduced to. The word labyrinth alone is a word I always felt for knowing.
I just always knew that box game.
With the silver ball.
Sure, sure, that's true. But I remember like when it would come up in, you know, fifth grade, we're learning about Greek mythology, and they'd be like, he put him in a labyrinth. And somebody'd be like, what's a labyrinth? And I'd be like, you don't know what a labyrinth is?
You dumb son of a bitch.
You dumb dick.
Yeah, exactly. And then Bailey gets sent to the office.
You misshapen dick. The best line from Henry VI. But oubliette is another one that I just remember always being like, I'm going to use that word someday. But I don't know what I'm going to,
But I also love the joke in that scene where they're like, you don't even know what it means. Because when they said oubliette, I was like, I don't know what an oubliette is. Right. And I almost looked it up, but then they kept making the joke. I was like, they're going to tell us. I'll wait.
Really, it's a place you put people to forget about. It's a prison for forgetting, and in fact the word literally means that. It's like oublier is like to
there's
forget.
A ton of car keys there.
exactly It's like all the things that have fallen under seats are just
in the change
is there.
Exactly Did y'all know that there is something that happens in this film that I actually didn't know until I looked it up, and then on rewatch I noticed and was like, this rules. People keep saying, it's a piece of cake. Mm. They say like 7 times in the film.
Oh,
every time they say it, within the minute, something horrible happens.
And that
was just like an on-purpose thing. And I don't know what the reasoning is behind that. It's just kind of a Jim Henson.
I wonder if it's like
like the Star Wars, I've got a bad feeling about this.
Right. Yeah. I wonder if it's a nod to Alice in Wonderland.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Well, a lot of that movie has to be inspired by Wonderland, The Drop Alone.
Of course.
The Drop Alone.
Sure.
What freaked you out the most? The Junk Lady?
Well, as a kid, the Junk Lady always scared the crap out of me.
Hands down.
The one that, like, shows up in her room all of a sudden, and she's like, what you doing? And you're like, oh. that was scary for me. But now on rewatch, I love that puppet. That might be my favorite puppet.
It's a good puppet.
It reminds me of, what's her name from Dark Crystal, the one-eyed.
Yeah, sure.
Matron wizard.
I think, like, because I'm an adult now, the part that stresses me out the most is not knowing what's going to happen to the baby. And maybe that's why that's, like, my least favorite character, because it stressed me out.
It's a very...
And they keep throwing him around a bunch. I'm always like,
they do, yeah.
Scene from Mother when they just rip the baby.
Well, and there's a few moments where he's, like, tossing him up in the air where it's clearly a doll.
Yes.
It's clearly not weird, But it's a great save the cat kind of conceit.
Right.
You know, let's just take this baby, give it to weirdo David Bowie,
and go.
And then you're terrified, but then he's also nice to the baby. But you.
But the baby's being trafficked.
The baby is trafficked.
I have a baby right now, obviously. And I currently own one.
And you currently
I got it on
one.
The black market. And
the baby
so
black market.
I like triple notice when there's a baby in something now.
Sure.
Like,
of course.
You think you notice, and now it's like, baby! That's all I think about now. Where's the baby at? Like, you track the baby really hardcore in the film, right? So I'm with you, Pam. There was a part of me the whole time that was just sort of like, yeah, but that's a lot of hands
who's
touching that baby.
His head?
Yeah, like, hope he doesn't fall off that
germs?
MC Escher staircase. That's scary.
Yeah.
These goblins have not washed their hands.
But
they are not vaccinated.
Unfortunately, have had two really awful baby in film experiences recently because they're covering Danny Boyle on Blank Check Pod right now.
Oh, yeah.
So I rewatched Trainspotting.
Oh, the kissing?
Oh, Trainspotting. Yeah, oh, yeah, that's so
and I
rough.
Just forgot. Horrifying. I totally forgot about that scene with the baby on the ceiling. And I was just like, I forgot. And I had to like stop it for a half hour and put it back on later. And then the other one was, and I had no idea what I was getting into, so this was just a Bailey fuck up, but I should have done some research. There's this film called Resurrection that came out in 2022.
You were
going to
say Dear Zachary, and I was like, I feel your pain.
No, don't. I can't even talk about
it. Yeah, okay.
I'm going to cry. If I even
I'm sorry.
Dear Zachary is a documentary that no one should watch, period. No one should ever watch it. All unless you want to just bawl your eyes out for 9 years.
Yeah, okay. It's
hard. I'm still not over that one. But, God damn it. But this movie called Resurrection, and I the basic plot, it's like rabbit hole type, like, and it's not rabbit hole, it's not, but it's a woman who has lost a child and is sort of dealing with that, but it's like way later, it's like 20 years later. And Tim Roth comes to her, it's Rebecca Hall and Tim Roth, and Tim Roth comes to her and is like, hey, I'm back and I have your baby that died. And she's like, what the hell are you talking about? And he's like, yeah, he lives in my belly. And I was like, what am I watching? And it gets to this point where she has this dream. I'm going really deep into this.
Yeah, no.
No, do it.
She has a dream where she opens up the oven and there's a baby in the oven.
Oh, God.
And Jesus. It's like cooked and it's screaming. And I had a minor panic attack.
Yes.
Of course.
Because
I had watched Labyrinth
children.
Right before it, where I was already sort of heightened to it.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden I was watching that like, I've messed up tonight.
That's too much.
I made some bad choices tonight.
But good film, and it made me rethink some of my rankings for 2022. Anyway.
One scene that scared me, that I know would have scared the shit out of me when I was a kid, was, I can't even remember exactly what happens, but maybe they're almost getting out of the oubliette, but they run into David Bowie in like a passageway, and he sends the cleaner after them, and it's this big spiky thing that takes up the hallway, and it moves towards them, and again, they find a way out, and Jim Henson immediately eases the situation because then you see the little Muppets behind it that are like making it run.
Yeah, right.
But that scared me as a 38-year-old.
I was always freaked out by the little vampire fetuses on the sticks with their teeth. I was like, even as a kid, like, I, you know, but rewatching it last night, I was like, oh my God. Yeah.
Here's Can a we cool. Also... Yeah, go ahead.
No, I was no, going to you... say, you know no. what else freaked me out? Was mom's blouse, how 80s that blouse was that the mom's wearing, and like shoulder pads, but then like layers of like crimping and grouping. I'm like, what is going
That'll
on?
That'll haunt
that?
Your dreams.
It was haunting. It just terrified me.
Even Jennifer Connelly has a bit of that weird kind of like...
It's like a peasant. It's like a poet shirt. That's what you would call it.
Yeah,
yeah,
she got the
it's
vest.
A little Benny and June. Yeah, it's a little, yeah. I don't know what it is. It's
loafers.
She got a Ferris Bueller vest. He wears almost the same vest. Yeah.
Speaking of Ferris Bueller, this was shot near the set of Legend. In fact, right next door to Legend. They were being shot at the same time. A film I love. I love Legend. Mm. They very much hold hands. Legend has a lot of cool puppets, and it's fantasy. And Tim Curry is the Prince of
Tim
Darkness.
Tim Curry is the devil.
And Tom Cruise as a small buck-toothed child. but Brian Henson, who was one of the lead puppeteers on this and son of Jim, ended up sort of flirting with and falling in love with Mia Sara from Ferris Bueller's Day Off, who's also the lead in Legend.
Well, who
and
didn't
they ended
fall
up...
in love with Mia Sara?
Oh, I know. Total babe. And they later got married.
That's cool.
Pretty sure they're still
Good
together.
Good for him.
Yeah,
Good
so that's pretty cool.
Yeah, right on.
I have a question for you. I have two questions for you, actually. But the first one is, and this goes back to what CJ was talking about, what we all kind of mentioned in The Room. Is it all a dream? And is that what we're meant to walk away with? Question mark. Because everything that happens within the labyrinth also is represented in her room. So are we meant to, like, there's pictures, there's literally pictures of David Bowie, the artist. There's a cat's thing. There's the orange things that take off their heads and switch body
there's
parts and all that stuff are sitting there. There's a labyrinth, yeah.
I do think it's a dream because remember the year and that whole it was a dream thing hadn't really been played out at that time. So it was still kind of a unique take in the mid, early to mid ladies, 80s.
With the ladies.
With the ladies.
Remember the
early
ladies.
To mid ladies.
80s ladies.
So my vote is dream.
Okay.
Okay. Y'all agree?
I don't want it to be a dream. I never see her wake up.
Well, is Wizard of Oz a dream, Pam?
Wizard of Oz was a dream.
In the movie, in the film?
100%.
Okay, yeah. You think she was knocked out by the tornado?
Oh, yeah.
And had a dream? Okay, okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
It was a concussion fear.
Because in the books, Oz is very much a real place that exists outside of our world, and she does very much go there, and when she comes back people don't believe her and she has to deal with that, but it does make it clear that it is a real place and that they don't do any of the she wakes up and you were there and you were, like none of that's in the book.
So but
in the movie I fully agree with you. In the film I think it's
also her aunt and uncle aren't described in the book as the Tin Man, the Lion, and the Scarecrow. Like they're
the likeness isn't
the same. Yeah.
That's true. But this time, I mean, what do y'all think? Scott, is this a
I don't know. It sort of plays out as surreal. Like it isn't a linear sort of thinking. I mean, she's going through a path and, you know, she has her hero's journey in it, but yeah, I'll go with that. Sure. It's a dream.
Sure. Apparently everything is very on purpose. This was Jim Henson really wanting to like put a lot of, and Terry Jones too, wanting to put a lot of metaphor behind everything and about growing up and about having a stepmother and about, you know, and you can feel it. If you're looking for it, you can feel all of that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think he was always intentional.
I think something that I kind of wish this had been a bigger part of my childhood, and something watching it and thinking like, oh, I would have been scared of that. Sarah's her name? Yeah, Sarah.
Yeah, Sarah.
She's such a good heroine because she walks into these situations and she's never scared of anything.
Mm-hmm.
She's always like, oh, how can I figure this out? Or you know what I mean? And I, as a 38-year-old, admired her for that.
Strong female
lead. Yeah, she's not. Yeah, she is fearless, and you know what's her lesson is what really learning about not being selfish and self-absorbed. I guess is the big overarching thing that she learns, but it's all the other subtle things and along the way. It's great. I remembered. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Bales. I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. What do you remember?
I was going to digress. I remember. I'd always remembered it as having more music than is actually in it.
Yeah.
There's like 5 songs.
Yeah.
And they're all Bowie.
Bowie. You know, it's one of the reasons he took the gig was, you know, Henson let him do what he wanted, which is great. And there's some great fun stuff in there. I just remember, like, in my head, I remember Jennifer Connelly singing. Like, I remembered that it was more of a big musical like that, as opposed to
what a letdown.
The Muppets and David, yeah.
It was enjoyable. I saw more lines this time, like, as you know, as a watching a filmmaker, like, I think that they hang a lot of sort of preconceived set pieces on a flimsy hanger, if you will, like, you know, there's nothing original about the plot or the structure. It's, you know, it's all being set up so that they can figure out how to do this amazing stuff. And we should also talk about, like, Warwick Davis is a puppeteer in this and shows up. Jack Purvis, who is one of the Ewoks and show in all the Star Wars movies. There was a great, they cast
there are
a lot of little people
getting cast right now. I mean, Legend is full of little people, little actors.
Kenny Baker, R2-D2 himself is in there.
Yeah.
I think he might have been in Legend as well. I think they might have been.
He worked all the time. Around. Plus, he was a time bandit.
Time bandit.
Well, so was Jack Purvis was also a time
bandit. Okay, so my second big question is, would it be good on stage? And that kind of this kind of goes to what you were saying, Scott. It's not really a musical. You'd have to beef it up.
Mm-hmm.
You'd have to add music.
I had thought about that. It's a great question because I was like, oh, could you do this you know, seeing beyond the expense of the number of puppeteers that you would have in order to really pull it off well. Although you could do a lot now with animatronics, I would imagine, as well as
projections. And think of the insane sets you would have too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, some of them are just jaw-dropping in their detail. Like, and Brian, I was watching with Brian Krasner, friend of the pod, was watching with me.
Hey, Brian.
Hey, Brian. And he was like, oh, it's not kind of as big as like a Lord of the Rings. And I'm like, no, they didn't have anything digital. You couldn't do those sets or that kind of depth and all
but
that.
But it's sort of the height of practical.
Absolutely.
Practical dies a few years later. In fact, this has one of the first animal CGI characters. It's the owl that flies around.
Yes,
it looks like shit. Looks like a video game. But the first actual character that was CGI to ever be in a film was film? Do you know?
Oh, I used
Young
to know
Sherlock
this.
Holmes?
Correct.
Boom! Oh, where's my money? Where's my money, dude? Give me that dollar.
Just slapping that
dollar bills, y'all.
My favorite recurring joke.
I just bought that steelbook. It's absolutely gorgeous. Look at this.
It's a cool flick too. That actor was quite good, and he worked quite a bit in England, and still does.
Yeah, it rules.
It's a cool flick. I think Spielberg produced it. I might be wrong.
Puppet question.
No, you're right.
Oh.
Especially for old millennials. Do we think the talking rock walls were an analog for Old Mac from Legends of the Hidden Temple?
Whoa. That's a
good question.
If you want, I was the kind of kid that associated anything that was similar to each other. So if you want the absolute truth, when I was a child, I believed she was all of a sudden in the Hidden Temple.
Uh-huh. Yes.
I was like, oh, shit. Wow. She made it all the way to the Hidden Temple. Yeah.
And
they must cross through the labyrinth while they're doing it.
That might be the funniest scene for me in that movie, especially when one's like, okay, I'm just doing my job.
Just talking. My bad.
All right, cool. All right. Did you guys notice the David Bowie face in the rocks?
No.
That's funny.
There's a sequence where a series of rocks are lined up, and as you look, as the camera straight on it, it's clearly David Bowie. And then as it moves, you can start to see them all as separate, and then he emerges out of it. It's really cool. Like, I was like, that's rad.
Oh, I know what you're talking about now. Yes, that is very cool. Another puppet we didn't really talk about that I think is really interesting are the doorknobs. The one that has has it in its mouth and one has it through his ears.
Yeah.
And it looks very metal. And I don't mean like it looks like metallic. Like, it's very cool.
It's got that bronze copper.
The way their mouth moves. Yeah, it's very, very interesting.
It just always looks wet.
Yeah.
I was about to say something really inappropriate.
Moist.
CJ Moist.
I'm scrolling through the IMDb trivia right now, and nothing super crazy here. Nothing like great that we haven't really talked about, but there's like some interesting ones. But I want to read just one.
Okay.
Because this is the kind of shit you find on IMDb trivia where you're like, who added this? But also like, kind of interesting. Here we go. This movie has a Robin Hood connection.
Okay.
Does it? We'll see.
Which one?
Sarah. A Robin Hood connected to Robin Hood.
Okay.
The character. Sarah has a scrapbook. And on an opened page, it shows the fox Robin Hood from Disney's Robin Hood 1973.
Oh.
Okay. Actor Brian Bedford, who provided the voice of Robin Hood in that film, passed away on the same day as David Bowie.
Wow.
In 2016.
Wow.
Whoa.
4 days later, this is the part I don't know why they added in.
Okay.
4 days later, on the 14th of January, 2016, Alan Rickman died, who was in the film Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves.
Okay. Yeah,
same day as my drunk piece of shit grandfather.
I don't like it.
Wow. Wow.
I always remember it as the day Alan Rickman died because I cared about that more.
Aw. That's interesting.
That's a whole other podcast.
Wow. We're going to be haunted. This podcast is haunted.
All those synchronicity things are cool. I love all those
coincidence.
Yeah.
I think it's a film a lot of people really love. I think there's a massive audience of, as you said, Pam, cult.
It's a nostalgic thing too.
But also nostalgic now too. Yeah, but there's some kind of like Phantom of the Opera grossness, like we talked about a bit. Mm. That, but I think that might be on purpose. Like, the masquerade scene isn't hot; it's gross. And I know it was an awakening for a lot of people, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But I think it's meant to be a little bit like, ooh, why is he so close to her? Why is he wearing such tight pants?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And putting it in her face.
And putting it in her face.
But it's, I mean, it's also that thing that we've talked about with Phantom of the Opera is, it's also, she's a 16-year-old girl, and the amount of men that were way too old for me that I was hot for when I was 16, like, if that's her thing, like her whatever fantasy or dream or whatever, I'm not saying it's appropriate, but like, I guess I could fadge it out that way.
Vag it out?
Fadge.
Frank Oz also was a major puppeteer on this. Yoda himself, Frank Oz.
Yeah. He better have been.
I want to read the log line for this because it's very interesting, but CJ, you never broke in for this, so it just never happened, and I'm sorry.
Oh, that's okay. I can do it now if you want.
I need you to do it now.
Okay.
But we're going to leave it this deep in the episode.
I love it. Yeah, we've done this before. I like being deep in the episode.
Mm-hmm.
CJ's breakdown. Sarah is 16 years old. She's not a child anymore, and she's sick of her parents constantly going out and leaving her home to look after her baby brother, Toby. It's not fair. When her wish is granted and the Goblin King, Jareth, kidnaps Toby, she's taken to a fantastical world where she has to solve the labyrinth leading to the king's castle. Along the way, she finds friends to help who are in need of her help, too.
Aww, yeah.
That's right. Now, yeah, I love that she makes friends. And at the end, they're in the mirror, it's like actually legitimately kind of sad.
They're really there.
Yeah. Oh, and then they party, and then it's over.
Bye, Sarah.
He's just a crazy person.
But it's almost like, it's almost like that's the take. The end is either that, like, she had this dream and she woke up and she's insane, and they're all still there.
In the prequel or in the sequel, she gets a lobotomy.
That's right. Well, that's Return to Oz. Also, okay. So this is the log line for this, which I remember being on my poster that I had.
Yeah.
And I put it in a paper one time, my Good Life paper, my senior year of high school that I had to write. And I remember them writing the note next to it. What the fuck does that mean?
Mm-hmm.
Where everything seems possible and nothing is what it seems. So does that mean nothing's possible? So where everything seems possible, but nothing is what it seems. So nothing's possible is what that means.
There was a whole Lucasfilm kind of, because I remember the trailer for Willow.
Yeah.
When I saw, and it was, there was nothing from the movie. It was just like slowly, like the title card came up and it was like, forget all that you know or all you think you know. And then you went to see it and it was like, this is fine. It's Willow. It's, but it wasn't mind blowing like that. But it was a very 80s log line.
That's true.
You know.
Do y'all have anything you want to say to close us out about Labyrinth?
I have a couple things to say.
Do it.
I feel like the loop group session for the Bog of Eternal Stench must have been fucking hilarious.
Oh my God.
I love that scene.
It's so
in the
gross.
Novelization of this, which I've never read, but apparently that gets very, very much extended, and you get a lot of info on the bog.
Oh, sure.
And I kind of want to understand the bog people a little bit better.
It's also the little sphincters.
It's so gross.
It's pretty gross. Sphincters
is
labyrinth.
labyrinth.
And I had a logistical question. Where did y'all watch it? Like what streaming did you watch the actual physical thing, Bailey?
Oh, I watched it on Netflix.
Yeah.
Okay. So anyone that has now heard this episode and wants to listen to it, I just noticed today when I was rewatching it, it's going to be off Netflix on March 31st.
Oh,
so if
dear.
This is inspiring you to rewatch, get
Netflix,
on it,
get
y'all.
On, yeah. See, again, we get back to the platforms. The things are switching from one thing to another. I got to get Paramount media. Plus so that I can watch.
Well, I was wondering why this wasn't on Disney Plus. I thought all the Muppet stuff was on Disney now.
It's only half owned by the Hensons. Right. The other half is Lucasfilm. So.
Okay, well, but Lucasfilm is also owned by Disney. That's why
but
it's
I think there's a weird rights thing with it. Like, it's more complicated than we know. Yeah.
Well, let's see. This DVD was produced by Sony, so it's probably a Sony problem. I bet that's it, because Sony...
In the big battle, they were like, you can have everything but Labyrinth.
Well, or Spider-Man, or Venom, or Morbius. I don't know why they wanted that. Kraven the Hunter. Okay, let's spotlight some LA theater.
Yes.
LA Spotlight. DJ, spotlight it.
Same thing. Gifted at Loft Ensemble through Sunday, April 2nd. Go to loftensemble.org. And then I have another one, The Thin Place by Lucas Naff at the Echo Theater Company. Friday, Saturdays, and Mondays at 8. Sundays at 4.
I think that's getting some nice buzz.
Yeah. Through April 24th, echotheatercompany.com.
Cool. I've got Picasso at the Le Pin Agile, which is playing at the Ruskin Group Theater in Santa Monica. Go check it out. It's running through April 2nd. It's doing quite well and getting quite good word of mouth. There's Happy Birthday McKenna at the Hudson Backstage Theater. The Hudson Backstage Theater, I should say, on Santa Monica Boulevard. Check out hbmtheplay.com for more information. And then that's running through March 26th. And then finally, come get Maggie at the Matrix Theater. That's at 7657 Melrose Avenue, also playing through March 26th. It's Rogue Machine at the Matrix. Go check out roguemachine.org. for more information.
I would like to spotlight my one-woman show in the alleyway behind Ralph's in Pasadena.
Yeah.
Sunday afternoons at 3 p.m.
On Lake. The only Ralph's Curtis on Lake.
And
it's
Pam.
Called Tits Out.
Tits Out. Okay. I've heard
Can
great things,
topless?
Pam. Except I heard that the 6-hour runtime is...
It's derivative.
Okay.
It is a bit derivative. Scott, I am sorry to tell you this, but this episode will come out, I'm pretty sure, the 26th.
Oh,
so the
damn.
Things that you spotlit will not be lit.
I screwed up.
So again, the alleyway wrong. Behind
Ralph. So again, come to Pam's
every
show.
Sunday.
Yeah, exactly.
At 3.
So find some new material next time.
Well,
thanks.
The Picasso at the Le Pin Agile is running through April 2nd. So
perfect. So you have 3.
Sorry, everybody.
I'm just kidding. No, you have a whole week. Okay. I have nothing. I go see Casey's show that I talked about last time.
Yeah.
Thank you for joining us for part 2 of
Woo!
4 of original movie musicals, our second go at.
What's
it.
The next part?
The next part is your pick, Pam. It's Moulin Rouge.
Moulin Rouge.
We're covering Moulin Rouge.
Boucher
we're going to get naked.
Avec moi.
Yeah. We're also going to talk about the stage show. Did any of you see it?
No, I don't want to, and I'll talk about
that.
Okay,
good.
I saw it in LA, yeah.
So Great. Pam and I will be able to talk about that. And not you guys. You can't join. And
then, don't want to hear about it. Don't want to talk about it.
It's fine. Then we'll be covering Rocket Man, CJ's pick, the Elton John biopic.
Oh, I'm excited to have an excuse to watch that.
It's so
have
good.
You not seen it yet?
I have not. No.
Oh, you'll do it.
I'm going to bring
it.
Over
it's
my.
So good.
I'm going to bring over my Steelbook Blu-ray. We're going to watch
it.
We
should all watch it. I'd love to watch
it.
Yeah,
we could
everybody.
Do a movie night at my place. I really need it. Can you?
Let's do it.
Let's
I'm
do
in.
It.
I'm in.
Rocket Man. I saw in theaters 3 times and cried every time.
Oh, I'm excited.
Bailey made me go, and I'm
I
so made, glad
I was like, CJ,
did.
You're going to love this film.
And I did, and then I showed it to everyone I knew.
Anyway, that's all I got.
Do y'all have questions or comments? You can reach out to us via email, Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter. Scott?
Thank you, CJ. A big shout out to Ryan Thomas Johnson, who writes our theme song. Our theme song is better than your fucking theme song.
Bitch.
Aggressive.
Okay.
Right? He also writes all of our stingers.
It's worse every time.
And he's an amazing human being. Thank you, Ryan. And then finally, to the great award-winning playwright, Carol Churchill, who writes every single one of our episodes and doesn't even know it. And one day, Carol Churchill, we're going to buy you a beer.
True. Or whatever True. She wants.
Whatever she wants.
Y'all are my top girls. Anyway, subscribe, rate, review. Pam, we appreciate you for being here.
Yay, Pam.
We love you.
Like, so happy. So happy to be here.
We love you. We love you,
love
Pam.
You. I love Thanks you guys, too.
Appreciate we love you. I'll see you next time for Moulin Rouge.
Oui.
What?
There's a moment you know you're fucked. Not an inch more room to self-destruct. I don't actually remember how that goes. Yeah, you're fucked, all right.
For a spite, you can kiss.
Yes, you're sorry as goodbye. Fucked in the butt, and you're fucked in your night, and you're gonna fucking die. Totally fucked. I don't know those words.
Later,
blah,
everybody.
Blah, 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 blah. It does that. Okay. It Sorry, does. Scott. You can say what you're going to say.
No.
Blah, 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 blah,
blah. Blah. I want that to be the end. Just Scott going, ugh. Make it stop.
The theater. The theater. Theater.